difference between mediation and the collaborative law process. Today we're going to be talking about the difference between mediation and the collaborative law process. Fundamentally, they're very different things. If you were considering issuing legal proceedings in relation to money or children, you're obliged to apply for a MIAM unless you're exempt. Exemptions include domestic abuse and whether or not your children are subject to care proceedings. These are the main exemptions. If your husband has been convicted of a criminal offence against you, you're also exempt. If you're unsure, seek the advice of a mediator and also take a look at Form A. Mediation is voluntary. You're not obliged to mediate, but you are obliged to consider the MIAM. At the MIAM, the mediator will tell you about the costs of mediation and how it works. They will also importantly do safeguarding checks to make sure that mediation is safe with you. Since the COVID pandemic, more people are now eligible for mediation because it's taking place online through Zoom. Prior to the pandemic, very few mediators worked this way. It means you're never going to be physically in the same room as your partner. This doesn't necessarily mean that mediation will still be safe for you, so you must be open and honest with the mediator when they're asking you about safeguarding issues. Mediation can be beneficial because it can keep legal costs down. Some mediators charge less an hourly rate than they do for their normal legal work, and others charge the same. You may also be eligible for public funding if you're on a low income and have few savings. If your gross monthly income is less than £2,657 per month, you may be entitled to legal aid. You're not entitled to public funding for mediation, however, if you have more than £8,000 in savings. The number of mediation sessions varies, but it's usually about 3 to 5. Of course, there are exceptions, and you may notice that actually, if you're making progress, that a 6th or 7th mediation session may be useful, but only if you're making progress. Equally, after 1 or even 2 sessions, you may notice that you're not getting anywhere, and you're not obliged to continue. The mediator is not able to give you legal advice. They can, however, give you legal information. Legal information includes telling you about the Section 25 factors and how they operate, giving you information about the court process, the forms you need to fill in, the other experts you may need to consider. They can also help you with proposals for settlement. They can make suggestions for you and your partner to discuss. They can't, however, give you specific advice. And this is the downside of the mediation process. Even if the mediator is a lawyer, and I always recommend if you're discussing finances that you use a mediator who is a practicing lawyer. They can keep you on the right track, however, and you may find this really useful. So what's the difference between this and the collaborative law process? Well, the collaborative law process is a specific way of dealing with your finances. It's an alternative dispute resolution process. It can be really expensive. It can also save you money. So how does that work? Well, the thing is, when collaborative law works well, it's quicker, and that's where you'll save the money. However, upfront, the costs tend to be more expensive. Firstly, you have to find a collaborative lawyer. Secondly, you have to agree, you and your partner, to both engage in a collaborative law process. The lawyers will then talk to each other, usually by telephone, having had instructions from each of you independently. So you will have a session with your own lawyer in the way that you would in the traditional process. When you come together in the collaborative law room, you will generally have longer sessions. So you may have a 3-hour session booked at one or other of the lawyers' offices, and during the pandemic, this will be online. You will decide the principles by which you choose to have the collaborative process, and these will be written down. This is called the anchor statement, and it can include things like wanting to stay child-focused, wanting to be fair to each other, wanting to keep your legal costs down. And the lawyers will bring you back to the anchor statement whenever things go off track. As I say, you'll have already had your individual meetings with each of your lawyers. But during the course of the collaborative process, you will begin to negotiate with your partner in the room with both the lawyers present. This is called the roundtable meeting. And this is where it can be expensive because you're paying for two sets of lawyers, but you can actually make progress. There are some caveats, however. As part of the collaborative law process, both of you agree that you will not go to law. And if either of you does, for example, if one of you hadn't actually applied for the divorce yet, and part of the collaborative process was to discuss who was going to petition who and on what basis, and the other went ahead and issued the petition, the collaborative law process would break down. Equally, if financial negotiations weren't going well and one of you issued Form A, the collaborative process would fall down again. Currently, as the procedure stands, if either of you do this and the collaborative law process breaks down, you have to start again with a new set of lawyers. At the time of recording this audio in 2021, there are proposals to change the collaborative law process so that this changes, but it hasn't yet done so. This means that you need to be really careful. So who is the collaborative law process suitable for? The collaborative law process can be used by one party to try and force the other party to reach an agreement that is advantageous to them. It is not suitable for people in financially coercive and abusive relationships. It is only suitable for people who are on equal footing in terms of their financial knowledge and their emotional status. Often, in my experience, men who have a good understanding of the family finances want to use the collaborative process as a way to exert pressure on the other party to reach a settlement. If you find yourself in this position, the collaborative law process is not going to work for you because you're going to be in a room or on Zoom with your lawyer in front of the other person. Now, it's not the case that you have to have every single conversation with the other side in the room. Caucusing can take place. And this is where you effectively go into breakout rooms throughout the process to gather your thoughts, take stock, take advice from your lawyer before coming back into the room together. You'll find that you're often given some homework to do in between sessions. So that homework could be gathering some further financial information, looking at your mortgage borrowing capacity, getting further experts' reports. It's also fair to say as well that other experts can be in the collaborative process with you in the room. So you may have a session with a financial planner or a financial neutral in there. A financial neutral is somebody, usually a financial planner, who is brought in as a single expert to talk to both of you about the family finances, discuss pensions, and propose options for settlement. This isn't the same as getting your own independent advice because the neutral is neutral. They're giving you advice based on the numbers provided by both of you to them. You may also have, if you have children, a family therapist in the room. It's entirely up to you. If you have business arrangements with your husband because you own a joint business together, you may also have a forensic accountant coming to give advice to both of you. Throughout the collaborative process, each of your lawyers may talk to each other on the telephone in between sessions and have individual sessions with each of you to move things forward. This means that you get the benefit of having roundtable meetings to discuss in real time rather than death by a thousand letters, but also the ability to speak to your lawyer in private. In terms of the number of sessions, well, again, between 3 and 5 collaborative law sessions would be useful. If the two of you reach agreement in the collaborative process, then one of the lawyers will draft the consent order and the D81 in the usual way and submit it to court, and that will be the end of the process. As I mentioned earlier, if the collaborative law process breaks down, you need to start again. You may also wish to consider hybrid mediation. And hybrid mediation isn't the collaborative law process, it's the traditional mediation process, but your lawyers are available and present for you to take advice in real time. This can make mediation more succinct and more successful in real time, because rather than having to go away and take advice and come back, you're doing it in real time. Of course, this is going to make the mediation process more expensive up front because you'll be paying for the lawyer's time in the room, but it may also save you a lot of time. It may also save a lot of discussions between lawyers behind the scenes. One of the biggest concerns that you may have is spending lots of money on different professionals. But it's important to remember that they each have a different job. If you have pension pots that are worth over $100,000, it is likely that the court is going to want an actuarial report. And it's more common these days that, because people understand this, and lawyers particularly, that actuarial reports are just agreed between the parties up front and in advance. This is the cost that you should always plan for. If your pension pots are worth less than $100,000, it's unlikely that the cost of this is going to be beneficial to you. But you should always seek advice, and a mediator can help you with this. Financial neutrals have become more popular since the COVID pandemic, because using this as an alternative form of dispute resolution can move the financial negotiations on a lot quicker. So if you were using an actuary, a financial neutral, and your own solicitor, why would you consider using a mediator? Well, the reason you'd consider using a mediator is because the mediator can help you manage all of these processes. Using your solicitor exclusively can be expensive, and if you choose to, there's nothing wrong with that. If you think that mediation just isn't for you, then have your MIAM, understand the process, and choose not to use it. If, however, you want to use a solicitor but you want to keep your solicitor's cost down, using the mediation process to at least get some clarity with your ex about what they're willing to discuss, what they're not willing to discuss, what their thought process is, what their own red lines are, can be really useful. It can also be a useful exercise in hearing about the Section 25 factors and the court process together, so that you know that your partner has heard the same information as you. This is particularly useful if you don't have much contact and your ex is telling you that they're getting legal advice, but you haven't actually received a letter from the other side's lawyers, so you're not really sure if this is true, and whether or not they've been Googling information, taking advice from friends. Having the mediation session, even if it's just one, for a mediator to help you in terms of going through what disclosure is expected and what the Section 25 factors are, can be really helpful, because you know then that your partner's heard the same information as you. A good mediator can also help you with finding an actuary, understanding what a single joint expert is, understanding how a financial neutral may save you money, saving you legal costs. Many people think that trying to keep the number of experts down in their divorce process will ultimately save them money. And in many circumstances, the opposite is true. When you're thinking about saving money, it's important to think not just about the money that you're spending up front, but the amount of money that these people may help you receive as part of the divorce process. Many people want to shy away from using an actuary because it's going to cost anything between £1,500 to £2,500. But what if that actuarial report will actually help you gain an extra £50,000 in your divorce settlement? Wouldn't you say then that spending £2,000 was worth it? Wouldn't you say if you spend £1,000 or £2,000 on mediation, but that saves you £3,000 in time with your solicitor, that it was worth it? This is how you need to think when planning for your divorce, when thinking about who should be on your divorce team. Now, it's important that you feel comfortable with all these processes. The collaborative process, whilst it's there, it hasn't really taken off in England and Wales because it's expensive, because of the current limitations and the problems that can happen. Now, many collaboratively trained lawyers do something called quasi-collaborative process. And this is where they take the skills that they learned on their collaborative law course and they take the benefits, such as the four-way meeting, the roundtable meeting, as it's often called, and utilise that in the traditional court process. So they're picking the best bits, but they're not signing up to the collaborative process completely, which means if things do go wrong and do break down, that you don't have to start again. So when you're considering which of these options that you're going to choose, you may find it beneficial if you don't apply, if you don't qualify for an exemption, to have the MIAM and speak to a mediator to understand the benefits of the process. To accept that if pension pots are worth more than £100,000, that an actuary is probably going to be beneficial to you. And this is particularly the case if there are teachers' pensions, NHS pensions, police, emergency service pensions, which are often woefully undervalued. Deciding when you're going to apply for the CETV and the actuarial report can be critical because, generally speaking, you're only entitled to one CETV in any 12-month period. At initial stages of negotiation, you can work with the figures that you have. Mediation can be a great place to help you work out values of properties, getting your bank statements together, talking about your future income need, and understanding how the Section 25 factors may apply in your circumstance. It can also be a good place for the mediator to ground both of you in explaining what the costs of litigation may be, both in terms of applying on Form A, going to first appointment, how the FDR increases costs, how you have to justify your costs to the judge, and also how costs can escalate if you get to a final hearing, and this can keep you both grounded. Mediation can be terrifying if you haven't had any face-to-face contact with your partner for some time, particularly if there's been coercive control and any other type of domestic abuse. But it can also be freeing. Particularly at the time of recording this audio post-pandemic, it's also relevant to recognise that actually having this conversation on Zoom, firstly, may actually move things on for you emotionally. But your emotional safety is paramount. If you feel that you just cannot mediate, then you don't have to justify yourself. However, what I would say is, if you feel that you cannot mediate because you're too scared, it's fair to say that you shouldn't be using the collaborative law process either, and that you should stick with the traditional court process. You may be tempted, because you feel fearful, to try and negotiate with your soon-to-be ex, because you feel pressured to do so and you don't want to make them angry. If this is you, mediation is probably, if you're going to use any alternative dispute resolution, the starting point. But the collaborative process probably isn't for you.